education at its finest, black scholars doing their work. Malcolm was a great educator, and you know, Malcolm's works and his deeds and his words are so pervasive that an entire college curriculum could be built around Malcolm's words and works because he covers every discipline imaginable, and then some more. We'll now continue with our next great black scholar, Dr. C. Eric Lincoln. He's a professor of religion at Duke University, author of Black Muslims in America. Dr. Eric C. Eric Lincoln.
Thank you, friends. This is one of the great moments of my life because this is a moment when we celebrate the name and the person of one of the great men in all our lives, Malcolm X. I sat there and I listened to my old friend, John Henry Clark, and I have felt the frustration that he articulated so well over having to read books and pamphlets and magazine articles by people who knew not Malcolm X, but by people who have taken it upon themselves to define him, to define his meaning. And that is not just incidental, because people who define your leaders and define your history also define you, and they define your place in the world. We have, in the past 20 years, despite the arduous work of people like John Henry Clark and John Hope Franklin and a few other black historians, if you will look at the textbooks you read, if you will look at the histories you read, they are not histories that are written by black people, though they are written about black people. They are histories that tell you not only where you came from and the circumstances, but they tell you how you feel and how you felt and how you're going to behave tomorrow. That is not merely incidental. That is a stratagem of management. A stratagem of management. And until you break out of the chrysalis of definition by others, you will always be a slave. I had the privilege of knowing Malcolm X, and it was one of the most extraordinary privileges that my life has known. And I just want to share with you a few personal vignettes about the Malcolm X that I knew. My first contact with Malcolm X came in 1955. I was at that time a young shave-tail professor teaching religion and philosophy at Clark College in Atlanta. And in the course of my work, I received a term paper from one of my brightest students. And he said something to this effect: "There is no hope for the black man to ever be free, to ever be equal, to ever even be a man, so long as he is Christian." Because Christianity is by its very nature a slave-making religion. Now, that isn't exactly what I had been teaching. So I asked the student to come in and to talk, and he did. He was a student that for whom I had a great deal of respect. And in the course of our conversation, he let it be known that he was a member of Temple Number 15 in Atlanta. I had never heard of Temple Number 15, but I got in a hurry to find out something about it. And I went there and I listened to the Muslim minister. I noted what he had to say, and it fascinated me. And I went several times. And then later on that summer, or perhaps it was the next summer, I happened to have been serving as an editorial writer in the offices of the Atlanta Daily World, and I heard an argument up front, a political argument. And I got up from my typewriter and went up front to see what was going on. And there was this extraordinary man who was debating the politics by which America had enriched herself and had dominated other peoples in the world. And I listened and I was fascinated. And I guess he saw me with my jaw hanging open. He walked over and he held out his hand. He said, "My name is Malcolm, Malcolm X." That was my first meeting with Malcolm X. He had come to participate in a Muslim conference that was going on in Atlanta. My next meeting was shortly thereafter when I met him at the Atlanta Mosque, and he had with him a young man whose name was Cassius Clay. And they had stopped in Atlanta on their way to Miami, where Cassius Clay was to fight for the heavyweight championship of the world the next night, as a matter of fact. And I listened to that fight, and I heard Cassius Clay proclaim himself as Muhammad Ali after he had won the battle. I had no further contact with Malcolm until 1957, when I went to Boston University to begin work on a doctorate degree. I had already determined that I wanted to research the black Muslims. On my way up to Boston, I stopped in Greenwich Village and spent some time with an old friend whose name is Alex Haley. And then I went on to BU and immersed myself in work. Some very prophetic things happened. The first was that when I submitted a proposal to study the Nation of Islam, my major professor told me that it wasn't worth the effort, that they were not people of any consequence, and that I should do a study of the Methodist Church. Fortunately, I had been in contact with the famous social psychologist Gordon Ort over at Harvard, and had spoken to a couple of his classes, and had shared with them what I had already learned about the Nation of Islam. He got in touch with my major professor and told him words to the effect that he was suppressing history, and that it would be to his advantage and to all learning to permit me to proceed with the study. And he did, and I did. A few months later, after I had been made a fellow of the Human Relations Center at Boston University, and was still talking about this extraordinary religion that I had never come in contact with before, My professors asked if it would be possible for me to get some representatives of that religion to address a pro seminar. And so I turned to Le Farcon, who was then the minister of Temple Number 11 in Boston.